Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Warriors Off-Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau, and today I'm joined by sports writer Rusty Simmons. Rusty has been covering the Warriors in some capacity for us since 2009, and he's been a regular presence on the beat this season. Late Friday night, we sat down at Chase Center to discuss the aftermath of Friday's news that Steph Curry will miss at least 3 months after undergoing surgery on his left hand in LA. We opened up by breaking down just how long Curry could really be sidelined. So here we are right next to the court being deconstructed here at Chase Center after the Warriors 127-110 loss to the Spurs. Once again, the game didn't really matter. I said that the last time, I'm saying that again, because the news of the day prevailed, and that was Steph Curry is going to miss at least the next 3 months with a hand injury that required surgery. He had a broken second metacarpal in his left hand, had surgery this morning in LA, and he will be out at least until February 1st. And that's just when the next evaluation is. So he could be out significantly longer than that. We really don't know. I talked to a hand specialist today. She said that that's not too abnormal of a recovery timetable, even though it is actually significantly longer than the average person who has that type of injury. We don't know some of the details. We don't know where on the bone it was, if it was on the joint, if it was on a ligament or what have you, which could complicate things. But bottom line, not good news for the Warriors.
It's not, unless you like a lot of pain and suffering. Because that's what the Warriors are going to look like a lot this year. I guess maybe the fans can take some joy in watching the young guys develop because they're going to get plenty of minutes.
How can we just reflect for a second about how quickly this all fell apart? I mean, I remember showing up to Media Day a month ago and thinking, oh, it's ridiculous that people are talking that the Warriors might not make the playoffs. Like, sure, they might not contend for a title, but there's no way they're going to miss the playoffs. I mean, they have three all-stars without Clay, and then Clay's going to come back in February, and who knows, maybe they'll make the Western Conference Finals. Like, I remember being on this podcast saying that. I remember going on radio interviews. I remember just shooting the shit with friends saying that every day. And then you show up the first day of training camp and reality kind of slowly starts to set in and you see how epically fragile this team is. And then here we are, the worst case scenario has already happened, which is a major injury to Steph. We've said all along, if Steph even misses a couple weeks, it'll be the death knell. Well, here we are, 5 games in and he's out for at least 3 months. On top of that, you have Kevon Looney dealing with a neuropathic condition that's affecting his hamstring, and there is no clarity about how long he'll be out. Jacob Evans is dealing with a hip injury, and he's not a stud or anything, but he's a guy who's a rotation wing on this team and would be getting big minutes right now, who's going to be out 3 weeks. And then Draymond Green tonight shows up post game with his left index finger wrapped. Turns out he sprained his left index finger, could barely gripped the ball much of the game tonight, and I would guess that he's not going to play tomorrow against Charlotte. So they have a home game against a team that entering the season was probably considered the least talented team in the league, and you got to think that they're going to be favored to lose that game.
Yeah, absolutely. And even before Draymond had the finger injury, he's already dealing with a back, a knee, and an elbow. I think the Warriors were going to find a reason for him to sit out the back-to-back anyway, but now it looks like he has a legitimate reason.
Yeah, so it forces everyone to recalibrate not just their expectations, but just the offense. It has an amazing trickle down effect. And one thing that the big takeaway for me tonight was the offense was totally different. Obviously, without Steph, their entire offense, their entire system runs through Steph. So the only way they're going to be somewhat competitive offensively is to run their offense through D'Angelo Russell and kind of run a system similar to what Russell ran last season in Brooklyn, where it's a lot of iso ball, a lot of high pick and roll, a lot slower pace. And he looked pretty comfortable in that. He had really struggled in his first four games playing off of Steph, had the worst plus minus in the entire NBA, and was not shooting the ball well, just couldn't seem to find a rhythm with Steph. But, you know, kind of back in his comfort zone, he was dominant for stretches of the game, had a really good first half, then kind of struggled with some efficiency in the second half. But the reality of the situation is that outside of D'Angelo, they just don't have a lot of threats.
No, they really don't. Alec Burks is going to be a nice scorer for him off the bench, but I'm not sure you can run an offense through him. And it looks like you're exactly right, that they're essentially going to go away from what they've done for the last 5 years, look at their personnel and try to do what they do best. And for D'Angelo Russell, that's the pick and roll. So we're going to see a lot of that. On the other end of the court, they've simplified everything. You don't see nearly as much switching as you used to. As the young guys try to learn what it takes to play defense in the NBA, they're going to try to make it as easy on them as they can. So starkly different than what you've seen the last 5 years.
And to be at least somewhat competitive, you would think that they have to not be horrendous defensively, because even though their offense still has some firepower, it's not going to be near the top of the league without Steph. So they need to at least hold their own. And I find it hard to believe that they're going to be able to do that. You know, we've said it a million times, but they just don't have any elite defensive players outside of Draymond. And as you alluded to, Draymond's pretty banged up, and you're asking a lot of him as the only remaining player, not only from the championship teams, but from last season's playoff team, because Damian Lee, who's a two-way contract player, did not play in the playoffs. So he's the only player currently available who even logged a minute in the playoffs last season.
How long do you think he's going to enjoy this scenario of he's saying the right things right now, right, that he is enjoying the mentoring and he's trying to go slow with these young guys, but Draymond's a guy who's never lost in his life. So this is going to be a new challenge for him. And to me, it'll be really interesting to see how long he is into this mentoring role and how much he enjoys kind of bringing these young players along, because he likes winning more than anything else.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I'm most fascinated about with this entire situation, is just seeing how he handles it, because we all know Draymond is a sore loser. He's one of the most competitive people alive. He is not patient by any stretch of the imagination. And you've already seen him get a little frustrated at times this season, you know, going out of his way 2 days in a row to say we effing suck, totally unprompted. But it seems like he's at the point now where he understands the situation, and he's kind of trying to come to terms with it and just accept it for what it is. And there's a little bit of, I don't want to say he's acquiescing to the situation, but he's just kind of going for the ride. And, you know, the good thing for the Warriors is that there should be brighter days ahead. You know, I actually think in a lot of ways that this injury to Steph is a good thing for the Warriors. The reality is this team was never going to do much this season. Best case scenario, they maybe steal, if everything goes right, they maybe steal a playoff series. If Klay Thompson comes back in February, March, you know, they upset someone in the first round. But who really cares? I mean, who really cares about winning a first round series for a franchise that has made the last five NBA finals? I mean, that just doesn't really matter at this point. So would you rather win a first round series or make the playoffs as a 7 or 8 seed, or totally tank and be in a position to get a top 4 draft pick in what should be a decent draft, and then enter the offseason where you don't have the hard cap? You have a $17 million trade exception, the one that they got for the Andre Iguodala trade with Memphis. You have a mid-level exception, and then you pair that with maybe a top 5 pick. And you're bringing back a healthy Steph, a healthy Draymond, a healthy Klay, and conceivably a healthy D'Angelo Russell, that's a pretty good team. And there's some flexibility finally of what Bob Myers can do with his roster. You know, if he decides that D'Angelo Russell is not going to be a fit with Steph, and I saw nothing in those four games that made me believe that he could be, maybe you package him with that number five pick for, you know, I don't know, maybe it'd probably be need to be a bigger package, but there's a lot of Giannis talk, because if Giannis doesn't want to go back to Milwaukee, maybe they'll shop him, and the Warriors can maybe put together as good of a package as anyone. I mean, these are a lot of what ifs, but all I'm saying here is that there are possibilities, whereas this season there really aren't a lot of possibilities. And the fact that Steph's missing this much time and the offense is going to be run through D'Angelo gives D'Angelo a chance to showcase himself and show middling teams around the NBA that he can be a go-to guy still, which helps his market value as a trade chip.
Yeah, I think you hit on two really important things there. One, I thought one of the most interesting things about this season was going to be, could they stay close enough to that eighth spot in the playoffs for when Klay's healthy? And then the Warriors would have a really tough decision. Do you bring him back? What kind of load management would they do with Stephen Curry and Draymond Green all year? Now all of those questions are out the window. They're not playing for a playoff spot now. And so, one, I think that's exactly right. And two, you hit it on the head with D'Angelo Russell. I think they proved in the first several games that they weren't going to try to bend to his game. They were going to keep it as Stephen Curry is the key to this offense, and we're going to try to play it that way. Now they have no choice. Now they have to play D'Angelo Russell's style. And, of course, it gives him a chance to showcase everything. And if the Warriors decide that it doesn't work here, which it apparently will not, then he has good numbers. He has great videotape to show other teams, and maybe his value rises.
We'll have more of my conversation with Rusty Simmons right after the break.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So, obviously, the focus now turns toward developing the young guys, grooming them. Hopefully a couple of those guys can really pop, and the Warriors have some cheap bargain young guys who they can put around their core for the next few years and have, you know, as building blocks. Because, you know, as you know, to maintain any sort of dynasty or any sort of long-term relevance, you need to have young assets who are cheap and affordable on those rookie contracts who can help you in high level, high stakes situations. So the key guys we're looking at here are probably Jordan Poole and Eric Pascal. Eric Pascal has been a complete revelation in these first five games. He, to me, has been maybe the only real bright spot through these first five games. This is the guy who was the number 41 pick in June, or 40 names called ahead of his in that draft. And he's already proven to me, at least, that he belongs in the NBA, and he'll have a very long career. And he has the potential to be a great role player, kind of in that Draymond Green mold. You know, he came out of Villanova, knows what he's doing, makes a lot of good decisions. I've been really impressed by his defensive versatility. He's banging with guys much bigger than him on that low block at center and holding his own. So he's going to continue to be thrown in the fire. And then Jordan Poole, who has shown flashes of his ability. He's a shooter, a gunner, highly inconsistent. You know, it seems like he'll have a phenomenal game and then have two really bad games. Tonight he had a pretty good game. 12 points, 4-for-9 shooting. Sorry, that's just the second half box score. He actually had 20. Yeah, that's more like it. He had 20 points on 7-for-13 shooting, 4-for-7 from three. The thing that I like about him is even when his shot isn't falling, he keeps shooting. He kind of has that shooter's confidence, that Steph Curry flair, where, you know, he believes in himself enough. And for a guy who was the 28th pick, in June as a rookie, that says a lot. And so I think they're excited about him. You know, who else are you kind of watching during this stretch?
Well, I know your favorite guy is Smiley, and we haven't even gotten to see him yet.
Right.
But I think you're right about Poole and Pascal. And Poole, I think coming into the league, we knew that he wasn't scared to shoot and he'd keep shooting it. But he's a better defender than a lot of the scouting reports I read. He's never going to be great on that end, I don't think, but he competes. Right. He sticks his nose in there. So I think that's something to keep watching. And I think you're right on with Pascal. This is a perfect situation for him. Or it would have been the last 5 years, right, when he could have been a role player with a bunch of stars around him. And the Warriors have to keep – that'll be an interesting thing. I want to backtrack because I told you now they have to play D'Angelo Russell style. But doesn't that almost set back the progress of your young guys? Because you're looking at Jordan Poole and Eric Pascal and saying, they're going to be part of this.
Right.
So why don't we keep running our offense so that they learn it? I don't know.
It's an interesting kind of internal conflict that I'm sure Steve is wrestling with. Because I Steve doesn't want to give up his motion principles. He's been very insistent about that. But he's at a point where to even be competitive in these games, he doesn't really have a choice. But you're right. If the whole point is to bring along the young guys and groom them for the future, don't you need to be playing a similar style that you're going to be playing next season? It's weird.
It's a complicated system.
Right.
So, you want to start integrating all that stuff. And if you're forced to play the minutes, you're exactly right. You would want them to be playing minutes in the system that they're going to go forward with.
And one other thing that's interesting to me is that you look at this roster – and out of the 16 guys, I'm going to say 16 because, we have the two-way guys. There are at least – there are 8 guys who have yet to prove that they belong in the NBA. And they're being given free reign to show the world, the Warriors as well as the world, that they belong at this level, that they can play. And really, this is kind of one huge long audition for them to show, hey, you know, whatever team needs another wing or needs another big man or what have you, if I don't last here, take a flyer on me because I belong. You know, guys like Damian Lee, Kai Bowman, Amari Spellman, Jacob Evans when healthy, Glenn Robinson III. You name it. Marcus Chris, they're obviously the rookies, Alan Smilegeese, Jordan Poole, Eric Pascal. I mean, I'm naming almost the entire roster. But these are all guys who haven't stuck or, you know, haven't really found their footing yet in the league. And so that to me is kind of an interesting dynamic. And I think it's going to be kind of an asset for the Warriors because they don't have the talent, but they should definitely have the motivation on a personal level. These guys are playing for their own livelihoods.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I'll say two things. Other than Jacob Evans, because he's hurt, who do you think is the next best prospect after Poole and Pascal? Is the next one that gets you excited Chris?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that's part of why the whole branding of this situation as a youth movement and grooming the young guys, it's like, okay, but what young guys are you really that high on? I mean, I get it, Eric Pascal and Jordan Poole, but the truth is, even if Steph stayed healthy, even if Kevon stayed healthy, all those guys were still going to get major minutes. So you could have brought them along. I get it, though. They're just trying to put a positive spin on it. I mean, this is a really crappy situation at the end of the day, and what else are they gonna do? You just gotta kind of put a smile on your face and try to find some sort of silver lining. But you know, a lot of these guys, there's even if they have decent years at the Warriors, I don't ever see them being long-term solutions. You know, Damian Lee, maybe he does enough where you give him a minimum contract next season as a 15-man roster guy. Possibly. One guy that we were talking about before we started recording earlier is Kendrick Nunn. I'm sure everyone's seen what he's done so far this season in Miami. I believe he's Miami's leading scorer, averaging over 22 points per game. He's kind of been taking the league by storm. 24-year-old rookie who's a couple years removed from Oakland University in Michigan. He played the last few seasons in Santa Cruz with the Warriors G League affiliate, was in training camp last year with the Warriors, the preseason cut, was one of the best, arguably the best player on the Warriors G League team last season, where he shared a roster with Damian Lee and you know, a couple other guys who played with the Warriors. I'm forgetting Marcus Derrickson, their other two-way contract guy last season. And I went to a couple of their games, and I remember thinking, this guy's an NBA scorer right now. He just has a nose for the rim, is a great attacker, pretty good shooter, really strong physically, a little undersized, but you know, you could tell that he could get on an NBA court and score buckets. And I think at the time, you know, maybe entering the last offseason, they felt like, you know, that's not really what we need right now. We have plenty of offense. But man, things have changed, and I'm sure that Bob Myers is kind of kicking himself right now, because they could have easily kept him in their system. Maybe he would have taken a two-way. If not, he definitely would have taken a guaranteed contract. And I mean, he would honestly be probably their second best offensive player right now. That's where the Warriors are at.
Yeah, yeah. And it makes you wonder. The Warriors obviously got the closest look at him. And it's clear that he can play, that he can score. So it makes you wonder. I know there are some sketchy things in his past, but they got an up-close look at his character.
Yeah, and everything I heard is that he was beloved in Santa Cruz. Aaron Miles has spoken really highly of him. You know, from my understanding, there were no red flags in terms of their experiences on a personal level with him. I know he did have a domestic violence issue in college, which is why he was cut from the team at Illinois and ended up at Oakland. I think he was like the second leading scorer in the country his senior year at Oakland. Just a guy whose abilities far out dwarfed the competition. But yeah, I mean, you hate to play that what if game. Obviously the Warriors have been on the other side of that a few times, where they've kind of stumbled upon that diamond in the rough. But one guy who we could not stop talking about in preseason, who's been downright underwhelming so far, is Marcus Chris. I don't know what happened to him. The things that he was doing so well in preseason, the dribble handoffs and the movement off the ball, and you're just not seeing it. And I'm not sure why that is. What do you think?
It's interesting, because here's a guy who, as soon as the training camp started, Draymond Green was already bragging on him and talking about some skills that I didn't realize he had. I didn't know Chris could pass the way he did. And you're right, the dribble handoffs, the between-the-legs passes to guys in the corner. I mean, he was doing a lot of things that made it appear as he was picking up a complicated system really quickly. Now, Steve Kerr almost always makes his decision on what you do on the other end of the floor. And so that's what I think, is that right. They're just not seeing on defense what they need. Right, and then you can't get on the floor.
Yeah, and they bring Willie Cauley-Stein back, and suddenly even though they still don't have Kevon, the front court in that center position is not as shallow. So maybe there's less minutes to go around. He was a straight up DMP the other night. Didn't play at all in a game to the Suns, where they were getting blown out pretty much the whole game, which was weird to me. I mean, why don't you play everyone, right, especially with Steve Kerr? So you wonder if maybe he was in the doghouse or what have you. But, that's been a puzzling thing. There's not a lot of positives right now. There's just it's been crazy just as a beat writer, because for me, I got on this beat right after they signed Kevin Durant. So I've been incredibly spoiled. I have experienced nothing but the absolute peak of the NBA. And I guess in my own little world, without realizing it, I got to a point where it started to feel normal. And I thought, this is what it is. You know, I'm just going to come in every season, going to be working until June covering the finals, and then, you know, get my off time in August. But I'm already finding myself thinking about April and May vacations, because because I have a feeling the Warriors won't still be playing come May.
When Steve Kerr said the other day, welcome to NBA reality, he was talking to you. He wasn't talking to the fans.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And you're someone who has experienced that NBA reality. You covered the Warriors well before they were a dynasty. Do you have any tips for someone like myself who is kind of trying to figure out how to withstand the NBA grind when you're not necessarily covering a nationally relevant team anymore?
Well, I think you'll actually enjoy it a lot because I think you have a lot of creative story ideas. You like a lot of the developmental stuff and the prospect stuff. And that's what you have to do to stay engaged, to keep yourself engaged, to keep the readers engaged, is come up with creative ways to tell the story. The big difference between this team and a lot of the bad teams I covered is this group has 5 years of equity built up. And they've got Hall of Fame players coming back from injury. I covered a lot of teams that were bad, had a bad draft choice that they were trying to develop, and nobody coming back from injury. Right. So there's still a lot of great storylines here. There's a great fan base here. And the fans are still at the point where they're coming to watch the injured Warriors.
Right.
I covered a lot of teams where the fans were coming to watch the best player on the other team.
Right.
So it's very different.
Awesome, Rusty. Well, I really appreciate it. You know, I don't blame Warriors fans if they decide to take a few weeks off here and there this season. We will not. We will be locked and loaded at sfchronicle.com every single day. Stay with us. If you're trying to find something to keep you going, keep you interested, hopefully we can do that for you. We try to find creative angles and creative stories. We have several coming down the pipe that I'm excited about. So, and as always, we'll keep the podcast going. We've had it already several times this week just because there's been so much news, and we'll do it as news warrants. But if nothing else, we'll at least do it once a week. So thanks for listening, and please come back. Warriors Off Court is part of the San Francisco Chronicle podcast network. Audrey Cooper is the editor-in-chief. If you like this show, we'd love it if you subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts. And if you've got a minute to give us a quick review, that helps us build our audience so we can keep growing. Follow me on Twitter at @con_cron and email me at cleturno@sfchronicle.com. Support Warriors Off Court and a lot of great journalism with a subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. There are print and digital editions. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe.